This episode is sponsored by InMobi. How can marketers deliver personalized experiences on mobile that resonate with InMobi's insights, audiences, and addressability? Find your customers with their 10,000 premium audiences, or build your own with their cutting-edge ID-less addressability framework. Track your campaign's performance with their insights platform. Go to InMobi.com to learn how InMobi gives you more.
It has innovation in spades, especially when compared to many of its competitors. It is one of the most copied apps out there, thinking all the way back to stories. It invented that. Instagram, Facebook kind of popularized it.
Hey gang, it's Monday, May 15th. Jasmine and listeners, welcome to the Behind the Numbers Daily and eMarketer podcast made possible by InMobi. I'm Marcus. Today I'm joined by one of our principal analysts who covers everything social media based out of California. It's Jasmine Emberg.
Hey, Marcus. Hey, everyone.
Today's fact, Jasmine, is of course about
Finland.
About Finland, because Jasmine's from Finland. And I promised her a fact. Every time she comes on the show, I promised her a fact about Finland. So, Finland is nicknamed the land of...
There's a few, but I think you're going to say, is it 100,000 lakes?
1,000 lakes,
is
yes.
Is it 1,000 lakes?
But, well, you're right, because it's nicknamed the land of 1,000 lakes, but it should be the land of 100,000 lakes, because there are 187,888 lakes in Finland. So you're right, it should have a different name. You would think that would make it the country with the most lakes, or at least in the top 10. However, the only ranking I could find included lakes 100,000 square meters, which is about 18 football fields, and bigger. So it's not counting the small ones. So when you count countries with lakes 100,000 square meters or larger, Canada comes in first. Nearly 900,000 lakes. Russia, four times fewer, close to 200,000. The US, 100,000, then China. Little old Sweden, Brazil, and much smaller Norway have about 20,000 each. Finland has one lake for every 24 people. So if if you're near a lake in Finland, there are 25 folks around, you can say, hey, get the hell out of here. There are enough people here already. Find another.
And there's probably another lake just around the corner.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway. You take 10 steps over there, sir. Get your own lake. Anyway, today's real topic. Can Snapchat innovate its way back to health? So in today's episode, first in the lead, we'll cover Snapchat's latest ups and downs. Then, for in other news, we'll discuss TikTok bringing viewers to bigger screens and what folks are doing on different social media platforms. Jasmine, we start with the lead. We're talking about Snapchat. Let's start with the top line number of Snap's revenues falling 7% year on year in Q1. Negative 7 year on year Q1 is the first decline since going public in 2017. Last Q1, they had grown nearly 40%. So from 40 to negative 7, last Q1 to this Q1. How alarmed are you by this negative 7% total revenue growth for Snap?
I'm concerned. Especially in light of the fact that we saw other digital social platforms, you know, somewhat start to rebound in Q1. Meta came in with 3% ad revenue growth or revenue growth last quarter, and Snap registered its first ever revenue decline. And, you know, Snap spent a lot of time talking about some of the short-term issues that, you know, caused the decline. And there is some truth to that. You know, there was a difficult comparison to Q1 of 2022, which you mentioned. There was a disruption in demand, which they were talking about. They are revamping their ad platform, and advertising, of course, makes up the majority of its revenues. But for me, it's a signal that there really are these much deeper rooted issues within Snapchat. And, you know, you and I have talked about them previously on this podcast, but one of them, of course, is that it's a much smaller player than Facebook or Instagram. And, yes, you know, it's still a tough economic environment. and advertisers are still turning to tried and true platforms over smaller or experimental ones. Snapchat mm-hmm. has also positioned itself as a Gen Z messaging app, and it continues to at least push the messaging portion of that. And messaging apps are really difficult to monetize. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of different factors at play here, but it is definitely, you know, reason to be concerned about the health of Snap's business right now.
Definitely more of a Gen Z app. Off the top of my head, I think share of users under the age of 35, it's like over 80%, 80, 85%, somewhere in that region. Mm-hmm. You mentioned them as being a smaller player. Snapchat share of social network ad dollars, share of that bucket of social network ad dollars is smaller than Pinterest's, half the size of LinkedIn, to just 3%. So Snapchat's 3%, that's smaller than Pinterest, half the size of LinkedIn, and Meta for context, 75%. That 3% for Snapchat is also going to tick down in the next few years from 3 to 2.9. So that's even going in the wrong direction. Its share of social network ad dollars. Yeah, Jasmine, when you zoom in, you can really see what's going on here. North America revenue fell for the second straight quarter, negative 14 in Q4, negative 16% in Q1. The difference being that in Q4, Europe and rest of world were able to carry the team a little bit better. Mm-hmm. So they only posted a 0% growth overall because of those regions doing okay. This quarter, revenue from Europe was down negative 2. Rest of world was up 35%, but it wasn't enough to keep Snap out of the red. Other worrying signs, average revenue per user in North America dropped from nearly $8 to $6.50. Q1 last year to Q1 2023, that dragged down global average revenue per user. The one bright spot, Jasmine, in terms of dollars seemed to be that the net losses narrowed very slightly. So not enough to really be that big of a deal. Looking at the users though, Snapchat added 8 million daily active users in Q1. They count dailies. Other folks count monthlies, or in the case of Facebook, they count monthly and daily. But looking at daily active users, Snapchat added 8 million in Q1, half as many as last Q1. They now have 383 million total, 383. What did you make of this 8 million DAU increase?
Well, it's the same story, you know, almost every quarter, or pretty much every quarter for Snap, yeah. Right? I mean, it's somehow always able to squeeze daily user growth. And I think that's, you know, a testament to its staying power among Gen Z. I think where it struggled, and partially because it has pitched itself as a Gen Z app, is expanding to other audiences, especially older generations. And, you know, eventually it's going to come to a point where it's going to need to start looking at how, and I mean, it has done this in the past, but to not very much success, but how to expand into those older audiences as well.
Yeah. Speaking of same old story, by region, it's really relying on outside of North America to grow mm-hmm. users. Rest of world added 7 of the 8 million that we talked about, grew 8 million DAUs in Q1. 7 out of those 8 were from rest of world. Europe added the other 1. North America has been stuck at 100 million since Q3 of last year. So North America posting 100 million, 100 million, and 100 million again this quarter. So that's hit a complete ceiling. Another interesting note, Jasmine, is where most Snapchat users are. The growth has been coming from outside of North America, but when you look at where they are, not just in terms of growth, but in terms of total users, today 50%, half of all Snapchat users come from rest of world. In 2019, it was close to a quarter coming from rest wow. of world. The quarter before the pandemic, 40% of Snapchat users came from the more lucrative North America. Now it's down to 26%. So a big change there. In terms of overall zooming out, looking at our estimates, we think 27% of Americans use Snapchat, that is monthly, but that's more or less flat. Same as time spent on the platform, stuck at 30 minutes, nearly 30 minutes behind TikTok, 15 minutes behind YouTube, and 4 minutes behind Twitter as well. It's not ideal.
No, but there's another interesting stat from our forecast on time spent, though. If you look at Gen Z users of Snapchat, their time spent is actually still growing. It's growing slowly, but it's picking up this year. So I think, again, you know, that is a testament really to how engaged its users continue to be.
Yeah, that's a great point. Digging a little bit deeper. That's fascinating. Speaking of users, So Snapchat just said they have reached 3 million users for its paid plan, Snapchat Plus. Jasmine, how much is this running for? Is it $5
a month? I believe it's $3.99. Yes, it's $3.99.
Okay, so $4 a month for Snapchat Plus. Your thoughts on this 3 million users milestone for Snapchat Plus?
Well, I think Snapchat has been able to succeed where other platforms, mainly Twitter, haven't in terms of subscriptions. And 3 million, you know, it's a big number. And what's really interesting is if you actually look at when many of those signups took place, about 1 million of them have signed up since January 31st, which means there was a boon in subscriptions over the past couple of months. And what I think led to that boon is the launch of My AI, Snap's generative AI chatbot, that during that time was only available to Snapchat Plus subscribers. So I think that led a lot of people to start signing up. And I say that because, you know, Snapchat has been able to find services that really appeal to its users to encourage them to sign up for the service. That said, 3 million is still a tiny fraction of Snapchat's user base, right? In February, it said that it had 750 million monthly active users worldwide. So just compare that to the 3 million figure. And you brought up the cost of Snapchat Plus. At $4 a month, Snap would generate under $150 million in annual revenues. So that's still not a very significant sum.
Right. 3 million is not nothing. But yeah, to your point, if you're looking at, you were talking about monthly, if you look at daily users, 383, 3 million is less than 1% of its total user base. As you pointed out, not enough for it to be able to generate what it's hoping to generate, right? I think they're looking for $350 million this year in Snapchat Plus subscription revenues, according to a leaked memo. And Mr. Spiegel, Evan Spiegel, is the CEO of Snap, was saying their medium-term goal was to reach 10 million subscribers. This was an elite memo from September, so he didn't put this out there. But I'm hoping for 10 million. They're at 3. It's not nothing, but it's nowhere near what they need it to be. You mentioned Snapchat's My AI chatbot. So a BBC article by Tom Gherkin notes that Snapchat's new My AI chatbot pins to the top of users' chat feeds has launched to mixed reviews, powered by OpenAI's GPT. Snap's calling it an experimental friendly chatbot which can perform tasks such as answering questions, telling stories, or planning trips. What's your take so far on Snapchat's My AI chatbot, which you said, as you mentioned, was initially available for just Snapchat Plus folks and now is available for everyone?
Well, I think my take on that article is, you know, people love, especially social media users, they love to hate change, right? You know, everybody complains in the beginning and then they either get used to it or the platforms listen to them and make some changes. And Snapchat has done that in the past. Do you remember when they made those UX changes that aggravated some users and they switched back? So, you know, and this seems like a pretty easy fix if it's something that, you know, is going to be more long lasting. I personally think that, you know, a lot of the angst around it is going to die down. And that's not to say that My AI isn't problematic. Snap has also admitted that it is. You know, it's supposed to be sort of a conversational friendly chatbot, right? And there are tons of issues with generative AI chatbots outside of Snap as well.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, overall, you know, Snap introduced My AI really as an engagement play. But what I think is really interesting about it now is that it is an advertising play as well. So at New Fronts, it launched search ads. And even before that announcement, I had written in a report that I wrote about Snapchat Partner Summit, which was a few weeks ago, about how Snap had to be thinking about ways that it can use the information and the search behaviors on My AI to be able to serve better first-party targeted advertising across its platform. And so, you know, it's really moved from just being a fun tool to encourage engagement to really being an advertising play for them as well.
Yeah. Yeah. As Jasmine mentioned, at New Fronts, they said that the chatbot's going to start surfacing paid links that are relevant to a conversation. There's also been concerns and criticism about the ambiguity surrounding whether the chatbot can access private information like location data. So that didn't help either. Final question here, Jasmine, for the lead. How concerning is Snapchat's inability to innovate and have that innovation, because even if they do come up with something, it either A, gets copied into ubiquity, or B, hasn't worked. And so what I mean by hasn't worked, some examples, Casey Newton of The Verge pointing out its inability to find an audience for Snap Spectacles, winding down of its original video series, the cancellation of its drone Pixie, Snap mini apps, not really becoming a thing. I'm the biggest advocate in the world for ideas and trying new things, but it doesn't seem like anything's stuck in quite a while.
Well, I'll start by saying that I disagree with the premise of the first part of your question. I think innovation is the one thing that Snap does not lack, right? It has innovation in spades, especially when compared to many of its competitors. It is one of the most copied apps out there, thinking all the way back to Stories. It invented that. Fair Instagram, point. Facebook kind of popularized it. And my one takeaway from Snapchat Partners, or one of my takeaways from Snapchat Partner Summit, is that that innovative spirit is certainly still there, right? Mm-hmm. I think out of the innovations that might prove the most fruitful for Snap is its AR technology. And as it's been pitching Snapchat as a messaging platform, it has been pitching Snap overall as a technology company. And those off-platform augmented reality ambitions are a really big part of that.
Yeah.
All of that said, you know, these are things that are in the future, down the line, right? And right now, they're not making an impact on Snap's bottom line. And that's where the problem is, because they need to be able to turn things around in the short term to be able to see this future vision to light. But innovation, for me, is not at all Snap's problem.
Mm-hmm. That's it for the lead. Time for the halftime report. Jasmine, one takeaway from the first half and Snap's Q1 performance.
Yeah, I guess my one big takeaway is pretty much what I just answered to your last question, but that is that, you know, Snap doesn't lack when it comes to innovation, but there are serious questions about the health of its core business, and it really needs to focus on turning those things around.
So Insider Intelligence's Senior Director of Briefings, Jeremy Goldman, noting that Snap didn't provide official guidance, but mentioned in its shareholder letter that its internal forecast for Q2 revenue is $1.04 billion. That's a 6% year-on-year decline. Analysts had Q2 sales projections of a slightly higher $1.1 billion. That's all we've got time for the lead. Time for the second half of the show today in other news. TikTok ads are bringing viewers back to bigger screens. And what are folks doing on different social media platforms? Story one, TikTok ads are bringing viewers back to bigger screens, writes Emma Liederman of Adweek. She notes that a recent Samba TV study identified TikTok as a more effective tool for streaming platforms than traditional TV in engaging new audiences. Ms. Liederman explains that viewers who tuned in after exposure to a streaming platform's ad on TikTok logged an average watch time of 86 minutes. That's a 26% increase from the brand's control group, cutting against TikTok's reputation of shortening consumer attention spans. So this story basically saying that if you're a streaming platform and you're advertising on TikTok, that's going to encourage folks to come and watch your shows. The most interesting sentence, though, in this article, Jasmine, is what and why?
You just said it. It is that viewers who tuned in after exposure. No, it's great. I will repeat it. Viewers who tuned in after exposure to a streaming platform's ad logged on an average watch time of 86 minutes, which is almost an hour and a half, right?
Yeah.
This great piece I had just read in the Wall Street Journal, which I highly recommend you read. And it was about one of the big conundrums facing streaming platforms, which is whether to release all episodes at once or one episode per week. And so then that got me thinking about my own TV and streaming habits. And I realized that I barely ever binge watch anymore. Most of my favorite shows are now released once per week. Thinking about Succession, Ted Lasso, The White Lotus. And then that got me thinking about a meme that I saw about how kids today will never understand what it feels like to have to go grab a glass of water, for example, during a commercial break and hope that you get back in time to watch your show because it's only coming on once a week, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And that's still true. But maybe this shift will get them to understand the feeling of having to wait a week for your next episode. And if you look at some of the top streaming shows back in that Wall Street Journal article, you'll see that a lot of them are, you know, Gen Z focused and premiere once a week. And so I'm thinking, is this a trend we're going to start seeing more of? Is this coming back in some way?
The one thing that jumped out to me was TikTok is Gen Z's primary platform for discovering new shows, according to a Harris poll. So yeah, good piece. Story two. A recent HubSpot piece by Maxwell Iskiev estimates that consumers spend over 3 hours a day on social media. But what are they doing on each social media platform? The results are terribly unsurprising, but good to see some numbers support conventional wisdom. So people mainly use Facebook to keep up with friends and family, YouTube and TikTok to find entertaining content, Instagram to share pictures and videos, and LinkedIn to learn new things. So they were the top responses. Folks said that they did other things on the different platforms, but that was the number one response for each of the different platforms. Jasmine, the most interesting sentence in this article was what and why?
So I'm going to give you a data point instead of a sentence, but I promise I won't go on a tangent. And okay. The data point is that, you never know, 41% of social users use social media to learn new things. And I found this really interesting because social search, or the use of social platforms to search for things we might ordinarily go to Google for, is really top of mind for me. And I think probably for a lot of marketers right now.
Yeah.
It's a trend that has been emerging among Gen Z for some time. And going back to this idea of generative AI chatbots, I think those types of tools on social media could accelerate it. Because one of the reasons that Gen Z is gravitating towards social media to search for things or to learn new things is because it's more engaging, it's more interactive, it's more visual than traditional search. And that's exactly what generative AI chatbots are, you know, providing as well, right?
Yeah.
On the flip side, it's also having a transformative impact on traditional search, like Google, which is incorporating generative AI into its own search functions as well, or search platform as well. It's a really interesting and emerging trend. And Debbie Williams and I are actually writing a report on it.
Oh, interesting. Stay tuned for that, folks. 2 points from me. One, the main reason for using social media, according to this research, social media in general, was keeping up with friends and family, 67%. And then finding entertaining content was a distant second, with 51%. And then two, by platform, Facebook seemed to have the clearest primary purpose. So its number one use case was keeping up with friends and family. It was a 23-point gap to its secondary use case, which was sharing pics and videos. TikTok had the second clearest primary use case. There was a 20-point gap between finding entertainment in first and learning new things on the platform in second. That's all we've got time for this episode. Thank you, Jasmine, for hanging out today.
Thanks for having me.
And talking a little travel before we hit record. Thanks to Victoria, who edits the show, James, who copy edits it, and Stuart, who runs the team. Thanks to everyone for listening in. We'll see you tomorrow, hopefully, for the Behind the Numbers Daily. It's the Marketer Podcast made possible by InMobi.